So we heard read earlier this morning what is often called the parable of the prodigal son. And I'm going to push back against that title a little bit here in a moment. But we all know the parable, don't we? That there's a man who has two sons, and the younger son comes and says, "Father, give me my inheritance." And the father does it. And the son goes off and blows it. And then decides after a very difficult time when he's down on his luck and things aren't going well to him that he'll go back and say, "Father, I've sinned against you. Please take me even as a servant." And the father sees him before he even gets a chance to say anything, runs out to him and treats him gloriously, which seems to tick his older brother off. Basically, that's a synopsis of the parable. Luke is the only gospel in which we find this parable, and so one of the things that sometimes we ask ourselves is, why is Luke remembering this story? Why does Luke want us to know that Jesus told this story? And so as we look at Luke's 15th chapter, we see that it's a chapter that contains three parables. It's the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and then I'm going to say the parable of the lost son. Why would Jesus tell these parables one after another according to Luke? Well, we don't have to look far to understand why Jesus would tell these stories. Because Luke 15, verses 1 and 2 set up the situation. Here's the deal. That tax collectors and sinners were coming to listen to and be with Jesus. And the scribes and the Pharisees were angry about it. They said, "Look at this man. He welcomes sinners and eats with them." So what's the setup for these parables? The setup is Jesus is welcoming everyone, and two kinds of everyone are being mentioned. Tax collectors and sinners. And some people don't like that. They can't believe that Jesus is doing that. Why in the world would he welcome these people? After all, we know all we need to know about these people. Jesus must know something's up. He must realize that his welcome of all of these people, especially these tax collectors and these sinners, has gotten under the skin of certain folks, especially scribes and Pharisees. And so here we have the parables. What one of you, if you have 100 sheep and one is lost, wouldn't go looking for it? Can you imagine having 10 valuable coins and losing one and not working hard to find it and celebrating when you do? Or imagine you were a parent and you had two kids and one of them asked you for something they really shouldn't have asked for, their inheritance, when they were still young, and they went off and did things they probably shouldn't have done and then tried to come back. What would you do then? Well, let's work out this inheritance piece with regard to the story. The deal was, if you were a father and you had sons, the sons could expect to inherit from you. And according to Deuteronomy 21, we find that if you're the oldest son, you get a double portion of the inheritance. Two sons are mentioned in this story, so let's do the math. If you're the older son and you get twice as much as the younger son, of whom there is one, you get two-thirds of your father's estate if you're the older son, right? If you're the younger son, you get one-third of your father's estate. Now, dad's still living. Things are still happening. The servants are still working. The calves are still mooing. The fields are still growing. And the guy who, when the father dies, can have one-third, comes up and says, "I'd like my third now, please." Investment counselors, wouldn't everyone get a little more if they kept it all in the family business and worked for it to grow for all the years so that when the father died, things would work out differently? You can imagine the older son thinking, "Wait a minute, you're not just getting one-third of our dad's wealth, you're getting one-third of the principal we're all using as a family to build up my inheritance in years to come." I can imagine the older brother was ticked off. So we remember the story. Off goes little brother, and he squanders it in dissolute living, right? He lets everything go. Hard times come. He decides to go back. He says to himself, you know what? Even the slaves at my dad's house are doing better than I'm doing right now. I'm scrounging. I'm eating the pods that pigs eat, and I'm a Jewish guy. I shouldn't even be around pigs. And bad pig food is the best I can do right now. I'm going home. In fact, the Bible says that he came back to himself. He realized what was going on. He probably spent his one-third lavishly. That's what prodigal means, to spend lavishly. But he ain't the most lavish guy in the story. Look at the dad. This is the kind of dad where his son comes up, hopefully years before, it's inheritance time, and says, Dad, I'd like one-third of everything you've got. And dad said, well, okay. That's prodigal. And here's a dad who obviously must have been waiting for his son. He must have been looking out for his son, because as his son's approaching, he sees him in the distance. He runs out to him. He prepares for him. He grabs him. He hugs him. He holds him. There's a ring. There are the shoes. There's the robe. There's the fatted calf. This is a prodigal father. This is a father who will spend lavishly, who will give generously so that his son can have. Definitely a story about a prodigal. It's definitely a story about lavishness. The scribes and the Pharisees were watching prodigal activities happening in the ministry of Jesus, and it ticked them off. Look at this, Rabbi. He's welcoming tax collectors. Tax collectors who are complicit with Rome. Tax collectors who are in on all kinds of difficult problems. Tax collectors and sinners. This guy welcomes them all. And more than that, he eats with them. What kind of deal is he running? What kind of party is he offering to the world? That must have gotten Jesus going, because he told him three stories all in a row. Jesus had his talking points ready. Wouldn't you go after a sheep if you lost one? Wouldn't you look for a coin if you couldn't find one? Wouldn't you love and welcome your son if you had one? The world's not just about private parties, Jesus seems to be saying. The world is about a lavish welcome. It's about love. It's about giving of what we can so that others understand how much we care for them, and that we are connected to them, and that our destinies lie together. Private parties might be pretty, but we can do better than that, this parable seems to say. This parable doesn't just say to us, you can go off and be a prodigal son spending lavishly and maybe you'll be forgiven. Notice that the son is really all ready to confess and ask for forgiveness and be treated like a slave. He never gets a chance to say any of that stuff to his dad. If we read the story carefully, we just see he rehearses all of those lines. We get to see those lines. We get to know that he would have said those things. But it never happens. Why? Because of the prodigal dad. The prodigal dad sees him, runs to him, welcomes him, loves him, celebrates with him. Celebrates with him. We don't see in the parable, because Jesus chooses not to tell us, that the dad ran out to him and said, son, where's that third of my money you made off with? Son, I heard you've been doing some stuff out there and I want to hear about it, and there's going to be a price to pay. Son, when you get back, indeed we're going to treat you like a slave, because your brother's done with you and he ain't going to take no more of this. Nope. Ring on the finger, shoes on the feet, best robe, fattest calf. Because this son of mine was dead and now he's alive. He was lost and now he's found. Let's rejoice. Let's rejoice. I've been wondering where this idea of prodigal came from. And since it's a Latin word, I thought, oh, maybe it's in the Latin translation of the Old Greek Testament. And I was just this morning reading through the Latin Vulgate, and it doesn't look to me as if that word even appears anywhere there. It does talk about the son going off and enjoying a certain way of life, but there's no explicit occasion where this prodigal understanding appears. And that leads me to believe this. It's been really hard for people to believe that what the father in the story does is the right thing. Over the years, when people have chosen to think about this story, they always choose to focus on the thing the younger son did was a bad thing, but we'll forgive him. So we focus on the son. We say the prodigal son. He did what he shouldn't have done. We remember the story by that title. I think it's because it's difficult for us to realize that this crazy dad, this generous dad, this giving dad, this prodigal father, and his activities seem to be the point of the story. Why'd Jesus tell the story? It looks like because the scribes and Pharisees were upset because he was welcoming and even eating with sinners, tax collectors. Why do we need this story? I think we need this story because people have been telling us all our lives that there are private parties, and if you behave the right way, and if you know the right people, and if you do the right things, you can be admitted to those parties. And I think people have been telling us over and over and over again, one of the best of those private parties is the church. And if you behave the right way, and if you know the right people, and if you do the right things, you could get in to a church. The story of the prodigal father turns that on its head. And that's hard to understand. I get it. It's very hard to understand. I'm the eldest brother in my family. Believe me, when I go to my mom's house and walk by, you know, I'm always like looking at the piano, making sure it's still in good shape, checking out the lamps, kicking the tires on her car. Not really. But I understand what it means. I understand that if there are things that someone might give to you and you're counting on them or thinking about them or hoping for them, then it might seem odd when somebody else receives a portion of those things. Jesus puts it in an entirely different perspective. Jesus says, look, it's about this relationship. It's about one was lost. That's the problem. We lost our son. He went away. He wasn't with us. The older brother was thinking, I lost a third of the family's business. What I lost was the attention I wanted. What I lost was a helper here on the farm. The dad was saying, no, no. No, the loss was your younger brother. Now he's back. Here's the thing. Jesus didn't seem to be about private parties. He was always inviting everyone. He was welcoming folks, tax collectors, sinners, everyone, everyone, everyone. This parable offers us an example and a choice. The example is this. Everyone is loved. Everyone is welcomed. Everyone is invited. We are to share lavishly. We are to be the prodigal church. to emulate the prodigal father. The choice is this. It's the choice the older brother has at the end of the story. Remember what happens? The older son and the father have an exchange. The servants let the older son know what's happening. The brother lets his dad know that he's pretty miffed about the whole thing. And here, this son of yours does this, this, and this, right? I've been working hard the whole time. I never even got a little baby goat. And this son of yours, dad says, he was lost, he's found. He was dead, he's alive. We're going to party. We're going to party. The end of the parable is an open question to the older son. You coming? The example is love lavishly. Be a prodigal church. Live a prodigal life. Share. Love. Live. The choice is, am I going to treat an open party like that like it's a private party? Or am I going to choose to go? Am I going to choose to go to the party? Sometimes parties don't turn out the way you think they will. Sometimes they get out of hand. Sometimes they're more raucous than you thought. Sometimes people you didn't expect show up. Kind of like the early Jesus movement. It got a little raucous. People were showing up that weren't necessarily expected, although I think Jesus expected them. Sinners, Gentiles, prostitutes, tax collectors, the rich, the poor, Romans. What a crazy, crazy party. We are called to be a prodigal church, a lavish church, a giving church, because we have been called by a prodigal God. That's right. We have been called by a prodigal God, a lavish God, a giving God, a gracious God. Church, we have so many opportunities lying before us to lavishly welcome the world, to realize that we have been lavishly welcomed, to be the prodigal church that God calls us to be. I'm very excited that in the past years, when we've had opportunities to be a prodigal church, when we've had opportunities to give internationally and nationally, when we've had opportunities to love regionally and locally, when we've had opportunities to speak to our neighbors and to our nation, we've taken those opportunities. Let's make sure that no one ever thinks that what we've got going here is a private party. Let's make sure that when we see folks, we run out to them, we embrace them, we put a ring on their finger, shoes on their feet, and a robe on their back. Let's make sure that we're those people of God who know that because God welcomes us, we're to welcome all others. And in that way, all that is lost will be found. And that all that seem dead will know life. In that way, we will share the hope that we know in Jesus Christ. Amen.